I hope I did that well. We are just so proud to be here today with our very special guest. Born and raised a Tennessee farm girl, Mary Beth Pruitt still lives on the farm started by her great-great-grandfather. She loves horses and dogs, reading, and good music. She doesn't remember a time that she did not want to be a writer. She's been writing her whole life, but ended up a librarian. Mary Beth also happens to be the great-niece of Sarah Ophelia Cannon, better known as Minnie Pearl, or as you'll hear Mary Beth refer to her as, simply Felia. Mary Beth is a wealth of knowledge in history, not just with her great aunt, but also with the history of Hickman County, where our interview took place. She works hard to educate people about the rich history they are so blessed to have in this area. So I'll meet you at the table as we remember Minnie Pearl. Welcome to the Steel Magnolias Podcast. We are two sisters here to have uplifting conversations about life in the South.
The South is full of beautiful diversity in landscape, people groups, and culture, and we want to showcase each part. We've got plenty of room at our table, so pull up your chair.
Well, we are sitting here with Miss Mary Beth Pruitt, a fellow double namer. I don't get to have double name guests very often on this show, so welcome to the Steel Magnolias Podcast.
Thank you.
We are so excited to be here. We are here in Centerville, just about 50 miles south of Nashville. Does that sound right? 50 miles?
Yeah, southwest.
Yeah. So we're excited to be sitting with you today. And we have so many different ways, conversation-wise, that we could go. But I want to start off by talking about your home. And I know you write about your home a lot on your blog.
I do.
You're on a family farm.
Right.
That's how old? How old's the farm?
It in two more years, it'll be 200 years in our family.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Tell us what the land that you're living on means to you. What is what is it sort of meant to you, or maybe even some of the things that you like to write about it in your blog? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, of course, I grew up on the farm and loved the farm. I loved all the animals and all the just everything, being out in the woods and going for wildflower walks, which I still do every year. And I don't know how to put it into words exactly. It's just I feel like my roots are there. I feel like I live in paradise. I really do. I've got this front porch that's just, and I think about all the generations that have sat on that porch and talked and shucked corn and broke beans and shelled peas and done all that kind of stuff, and it just gives you such a good feeling of connectedness and everything. Mm-hmm. And my folks, my granddaddy and my dad were really stewards of the land and talked a lot about how important farming is, and it was a small family farm. We had a little bit of everything, and I showed cattle, showed pigs, showed sheep, all that stuff, and then showed horses a little bit later on. So it was a great life growing up. I had a great childhood, and I lived in the house with my grandparents, and my grandmother, who is Minnie Pearl's sister, Dixie, was one of the people that I grew up with, of course, and spent a lot of time with her, and she was just one of the sweetest, greatest people in the world.
Wow. Well, you've already let the cat out of the bag, so.
Oh.
talking about your very famous relative, you come from a very funny family.
I do.
They're one of your most famous funny relatives would be Sarah Cannon.
Right.
Also known as Minnie Pearl.
And the funny thing about her name, I didn't even know her name was Sarah for a long time, because we all called her Felia. We didn't even put the O on it. We would say Felia.
Her middle name.
Yeah, Ophelia. Okay. And so the how you know when you talk to people, if it's people that knew her from Centerville a long time ago, they call her Felia. And if you talk to people that knew her later after she moved to Nashville, they say Sarah.
How funny.
And I never asked her why she switched. I never asked her why that happened. But anyway, and we called her Felia.
And if you meet somebody that really doesn't know her, then they just know her as Minnie Pearl.
Minnie Pearl.
Right. Right.
Well, tell us about that, Minnie Pearl. That was just a character that she came up with.
That she created. And I think she was creating her whole life.
Yes, from different people she
From the time she was a baby, she was much younger than the other sisters. She had four sisters. My grandmother was the youngest at the time she was born, and she was seven.
Okay.
So they had this live baby doll to play with, and they carried her all over town. And
so
they
sweet.
They would dress her up. As soon as they'd get home from school, they'd put all, you know, some kind of little fancy clothes on. And I can hardly believe this happened, but when she was 18 months old, they talked their piano teacher, their music teacher, into letting them put her in their recital.
And goodness.
They taught her a little song and dance and put her out on the stage, and she sang and danced. And I think that's where... That's where Minnie Pearl was born, right there.
That is so great. She was comfortable on that stage.
And from then on, she loved to perform, and she would sing at the war bond rallies, and she would do all that stuff. But she wanted to be a great dramatic actress, and that was not going to happen.
Okay.
But...
Well, this fictional character became very popular on the Grand Ole Opry, and then even on the show Hee Haw, which I will say I got to meet her in 19. I think it was about 1978.
Yeah.
When my family, when we would have relatives from East Tennessee that would come in town to visit, sometimes we would go watch Hee Haw be taped.
Oh, cool.
And that was, you know, when Nashville was much smaller
and
things were more simple at that time.
Right.
But yeah, so I got to meet Minnie Pearl and
great.
Grandpa Jones and
that's great.
The ones that were there that night, and that was very special.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she was deemed the queen of comedy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was. I mean, and she just was... She was funny, and she was a storyteller. I mean, she just, and when I hear her jokes now in her routines, you know, being objective about it, her timing was so good.
And you that's know, so would, important.
Yeah, she would tell these stories, but her father, Tom Colley, he was a great storyteller. And he used to tell them all these stories when they were growing up, so mm-hmm. I think she came by it naturally. And actually, all the sisters were, I mean, all of my great aunts were great storytellers.
I think that's such an important part of Southern culture, isn't
it? I think
it
is.
Just that richness and being with family, learning, like you're saying,
right.
from the older generation about storytelling, mm-hmm. and then seeing how it can be funny or serious.
We would sit around the table when they were all, would all be down at our house. We had a huge dining room table. And they would tell these stories, you know, that were just so funny. And they would tell the same stories over and over again, but they were still funny.
Yeah.
You know, they would just...
Get a little more embellished as the years go on,
but
too.
But they would tell that, I mean, they would just tell these stories, and everybody would just laugh and laugh and laugh. And it was great. And even her mother, she was a Southern Belle. Now, she was from Franklin. She was a Southern Belle. But she had this wit, too, and this... a sense of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I think I was about 12, maybe when she died, 11 or 12 when she died, but I remember her real well because she lived just over here in town, and I used to go down there a lot. And at that time, if Fia was in town, they would come and play cards. They played bridge.
Okay.
So every Wednesday, I think it was Wednesdays, they would come and play cards, and I would get off the school bus over there and go. And I know Fia would always bring her this fancy candy.
Oh,
it was in a green box. I think it was Russell Stover, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
But she would bring in, I was real fancy and, you know, had a little foil wrappings and stuff like that. And I was always so excited.
That was special.
About the candy. But I knew nothing about bridge and didn't want to know anything about bridge. But I love to just sit around and listen to them talk. And
what did you think about her style of, like, almost hillbilly culture? Like, did you find that funny, or did you even realize kind of what she was doing to sort of pick on parts of culture?
For a long time, I almost didn't connect the two.
Okay.
It's really funny looking back because I was older, and I knew she was Minnie Pearl, and I saw her on TV, but it's almost like it was a different... person than what she, you know, and then and then she would come to the house or we'd go up there or whatever, and she would take me and my grandmother. She took my grandmother and I to see The Sound of Music when it first came to Nashville, you know, and then we went to, I think that was the time we went to the, I was at the Iris Room that was in Kane Sloan's upstairs, I think, or I think that was the name of it. Anyway, she took us up there for lunch and, you know, things like that. And I don't know. There was almost a disconnect for a long time, you know, between
from
the
real person and the fictional character.
And it's like, and at some point then it was kind of like, oh, you know, that is Fia. You know, that is her. But then, but she would talk, and of course she would talk about stuff that happened at the Opry or stuff that happened with people and about meeting people, you know. And so I knew that she was Minnie Pearl, but I thought she, I mean, I thought she was hilarious. I always, you know, laughed at everything. That, and of course, you know, I knew a lot of people growing up that were sort of like that.
Yeah, of course.
A little bit. I mean, it was an exaggeration, but I, you know.
Well, now, she was from the fictional town of Grinderswitch.
Right, which I live very near Grinderswitch.
So I was going to say, was she just basically pulling from this area,
well,
describing
this,
things?
Yeah, this area. She, I think, got a lot of that influence when she was traveling with the Sewell Company. That was what she did when she graduated from Ward Belmont.
Okay.
And they would travel around and do plays and
across
entertainments
the South,
across
really?
The South.
Yeah. Okay.
Which, when you when you think about it, that was a amazing for that time.
Absolutely.
That she was doing that.
Yeah.
I, you know, I'm like,
Yeah.
And she, so she met people, and especially this one woman she met in Bailiton, Alabama. And that was really when she, I think, latched on to that character, because she stayed with them for a week and got a lot of the mannerisms and the ideas, you know.
I bet she got all kinds of good material.
Right. And she, you know, she said several times, you know, she really owed a lot to that family. And they they had a son and they called him brother, so that's where that came from.
Okay.
And you know, so but it was a it was just a combination of all of people that she met all through her life. Her dad was a lumberman, so she would go with him out to Grinderswitch to load lumber on the railroad cars. And all these men, you know, would be around, and they would be telling jokes, and they'd be talking and telling stories. So she got a lot of it from that, too. And there wasn't really anybody that lived at Grinderswitch much.
Okay.
And so that's why she chose that as her
hometown.
Wasn't going
to be recognizable.
Because, you know, nobody could say, well, she's talking about me or whatever. So,
And it's called Grinderswitch because of the railroad, correct?
Right.
Okay. That's just the intersection,
correct? It was a switch in, it's a switch, which is where they switch off the cars and add more or whatever. But it was named for the Griner family.
Oh, okay.
Because they owned the property.
Okay.
And it did not have that, it did not have a D in it. But the railroad added that D for some unknown reason. And there's a funny story about how that happened, because Ms. Griner, they went to see her to ask about crossing her property.
Okay.
And she said, I'll have to go talk to my husband about it. Well, her husband was dead. And they were kind of like, okay. And so she went in another room and talked to his picture, apparently, and got permission from him and came back and said, yeah, it would be all right. But she wanted a stop on that, on her property where she could catch the the train. So that's how that sort of came to be. But
so interesting. So,
but they would go out there and have picnics sometimes. All the girls, you know, would. And, I mean, they were, they had a fairy tale childhood. They really did.
Why do you say that?
Well, they lived in a big house up on a hill overlooking the sawmill, overlooking the river, and they were free. They roamed all over Centerville because nobody was going to bother, you know, nobody was going to bother anybody then. And they just, I mean, the stories they would tell, they would go across the bridge down there and go up on the bluff in the woods, and they would get up on the rocks and do plays and sing and make up stories. And my aunt Mary, who I've got a story in my blog, Everybody Needs a Crazy Aunt. And she really wasn't crazy, but she was very eccentric.
Yeah.
And she's the one that convinced me that there were fairies living down in the woods, and there were, you know, there was magic, and there was all this stuff. And she would go with her and recite. She wrote poetry.
Okay.
And she would, really good poetry, actually. I wish I had more copies of more of it. Mm. But she would get over there and recite poetry and do, they would do dramatic things, and they would have plays, and, yeah, you know, she and her friends and her family. And then when they got a little older, they would do these gypsy teas.
Oh my gosh,
and this sounds like, awesome.
It would be like a group of them, boys and girls, and they would get in the pony cart, and the girls would pack food, and they would have, one of the things that, they'd have banana sandwiches, because they said that was about all they knew how to make. They would mash up bananas and put and put sugar in and put them on bread, and you know, stuff like that. And they called it gypsy teas. I don't know why. I never asked.
But, sounds fun.
But they would go, you know, all the time and do that. And I mean, they just, my grandmother played in a band. I didn't know that for a long time.
Really?
But they all played piano. Okay. And my grandmother was a really good piano player.
All kinds of creative juices, right, flowing in this family.
And that's another one of my great memories of my grandmother playing the piano at home. And I've got that piano. It's still at the house.
Oh, wow.
It was my great-grandmother's piano. The one that Fia learned to play the piano on is in my house. So okay. I do not play the piano that well. Okay. In fact, I barely play it at all. But my grandmother, she played by ear, and she could play anything. Wow. And she would sit there and play all those old Sentimental Journey and My Last Date, and,
oh,
you know,
wow,
all those songs. And it was just, so I had a pretty magical childhood too.
It
but,
sounds yeah, like
but
it.
Theirs seemed like, it just seemed like to me very exotic, and mm-hmm, you know, very they had a, like I say, they had this big house, they had a window seat in their library, and they would do plays there and
wow,
all this stuff. And you know, Fia didn't have a chance. She was going to be an entertainer.
She was going to be on a stage somewhere.
She was going to be on stage somewhere.
I think there were probably fairies on this property, as much as magical as this all sounds.
Yeah. And I think they're still there sometimes. So, and that's where I got some of my writing thing, I think. And her dad, he told great stories, and he wrote. I've got a few letters that he wrote, and he had a real witty way of saying, you know, telling stories about things that had happened. And they said he never told a story the same way twice.
Oh, I love it. So,
that's a really good storyteller,
yeah,
then. Because then you're keeping the interest of those that
right,
would probably otherwise roll their eyes.
Yeah, and they would
it,
say, you didn't tell it that way last time. He said, well, don't you like it better this way?
Oh.
I didn't know him. I wish I had known him, but he was gone before I was born. So.
Wow.
Well, speaking of letters, we had asked you to bring along a letter.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
When I was born in 1953, I was born almost on Fia's birthday was the 25th, and I was born on the 20th of October. She was in Texas, and so she wrote a letter to me. From Texas that she wrote when I was born, and I've read it different times when I've done talks and things about her. So, all right, written on October 25th, and she's got in parentheses my birthday. Dear Mary Beth, this is a welcome letter from your Uncle Henry and Aunt Fia. We are so proud and happy to have you join our family, and we're dying to see you. Everyone tells us that you were perfectly beautiful and bright as a dollar. Tell your mama and daddy that we are so proud of them and hope that they get along fine with you. Tell your granny, aren't you lucky, and grandpa and Tom, we are proud for them too. We hope Robin, that was our collie dog, takes kindly to you. Want you to have fun together when you grow up a little. Be good and sweet, and if things don't go to suit you, you holler for your Dixie grandma. Let her run a few errands for you. That's what I did when I was your age. We'll see you next Sunday. Love and kisses, Aunt Fia and Uncle Henry. And P.S., please, Mary Beth, would you mind, when you're a little older, when you're old enough to talk, let's leave off the aunt and uncle.
Aww.
And we did. None of us
precious.
Ever called them aunt and uncle. We all
really?
Called them Fia and Henry, yeah.
That's sweet.
Uh-huh.
That's really sweet.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm I love letters. Seeing her handwriting posting. It's just so nostalgic.
She sent letters. She sent postcards to my grandmother all the time.
Really?
When she was on the road. I've got tons of postcards that she wrote.
Wow.
From when she was traveling so much and really on the road a lot. And just from all different places. And she would write me one every now and then or whatever.
That's so sweet. So. And she addressed it to you, it looks like, on the envelope. Yeah. It wasn't to your mom or your dad to hand
Miss
off
Mary
to you.
Mary Beth Schaus in care of Mr. and Ms. Wash Schaus, Jr., Central Tennessee. There's not even an address to Central Tennessee, but
I love that.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
She had so many memorable lines that people can probably just recall, you know, the obviously the howdy, but you know, I love you so much it hurts, or you know, were the lines that she had that she would regularly say that stood out to you, that you're like, well, this is my personal philia sorts of memories?
Well, my favorite thing that she said, it's not just a line, it's the, and I don't know that I can say the whole thing, but when she would talk about Grinder Switch, because it became more and more, I think, important to her as time went on. And she said, you know, people ask if it's a real place, and she said, it's a place in my mind, and she said, I can see it just as clearly as I can see anything, and there's this general store in the church, and she said, it's a place where there's no war and no sickness, and the only thing you have to worry about is whether your fella's going to kiss you in the moonlight on the way home from the church social, and I wish for you all a Grinder Switch.
Wow.
And that's the thing that stands out to me more than anything, that she created this, she didn't create just a character, she created a world. That I wish we could all, you know, live in, you know, or be in. And she did. She created this whole town and all these characters and in her mind, and it was real to her in her mind. And sometimes when I'm out there, our fairgrounds are out there now at Grinder Switch, and I'm on the board that oversees it, and so I'm out there, you know, pretty often. And there's a, you can go up on a hill and see all, it's one of the prettiest views in town. And sometimes I think if I can just go up that hill quick enough and look, that I'll see all of that up there. You know, all those little houses and all those people. It just seems like it's, that it could be there.
Within reach.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's so cool. Wow.
Well, now, she was a busy lady. She was, had her hands in lots of different things.
She did.
And I know, I was curious to know, did she and her husband entertain very often in their home, or were they taking people places more?
No, I think that in the early days, especially, they entertained at home a lot. Not so much later on, even family later on. And I think it's because we got so big. I mean, there were so many of us. But, yeah, I've read things about her having, you know, like a party after the CMA Awards or something. Because I'm always looking for things about her. And I found an old article about her having a big party after the CMA Awards in the 70s and all the people that were there and everything. And we would go up there at Christmas, not on Christmas Day, but we would go, like, usually the week before Christmas or something, and have a big family thing at her dining room table, which we have at the Historical Society now.
You do?
We have her dining room table and chairs. We're so excited.
Oh, wow.
And it's a big, long time. I mean, it is a big, long
really?
Table. She had this huge dining room. And we would all sit around there and eat Christmas dinner, and it was really special. And when I got married, she had a tea for me up there in her house.
Oh, sweet.
And all my friends. And so I've got pictures, you know, at the table. But, yeah, they entertained a lot, I think, and entertained family. But then in later years, like I say, they would take people out. And I know they took us, like, to the country club or somewhere, you know, where we would meet. Now, a lot of times on Sundays, because that's usually when they would come down and we would meet somewhere. We would meet at Montgomery Bell, or she loved to come to Centerville and eat up at Brees's. That was when Brees's Cafe was still there. And she loved, the whole family loved to eat at Brees's. So we would go up there, and she was friends with the lady that used to run it. Her okay. daughter was running it at that time, and so she would always visit with her and see her and
wow.
and see a lot of her other friends too. So,
did she have particular favorites from the Grand Ole Opry or those circles?
Well, of course, Rory Acuff. Yeah. They were real close friends. She was real good friends with Eddie Arnold, and Archie Campbell. Eddie lived right down the road from her for a long time. When she lived at one time out on Murray Lane, and he lived really close. They were okay. good friends. I think he was up there a time or two when we were up there. I was pretty young, but I think I remember meeting him up there. And but she loved everybody. She loved
Sounds
all the
like
young.
It.
She loved the young guys.
Really? Okay.
Well, the young women too.
Yes.
Yeah.
The up and comers.
She loved young people, and I always thought she seemed like she really gravitated to the ones that were sort of like getting in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, mm-hmm. that would kind of, because I know Dwight Yoakam. He has really credited her for helping save his career.
Wow. Time or
two, like, you know, because he said some things, and she sort of helped him patch it up, I think. But she loved Amy Grant and Vince Gill. Amy has got her piano, her baby grand piano.
Wow.
She got it when they sold the stuff. And she was real close to them. She was real close to Brenda Lee. And Henry was good friends with Brenda's husband.
Okay.
And so, you know, Brenda traveled with them when she was a little girl in their plane. That was when Henry was still flying, and she flew with them a lot.
Okay.
But she had, you know, some particular people that she was real close to, but she loved everybody.
Yeah.
One of the things that struck me that made me really emotional and really struck me about the documentary that they did about her were all these people that all these years after she has died, I mean, she's been gone now, about 30 mm-hmm. years, that still talked about her and cried, you know, and got wow. so choked up and so emotional talking about, you know, what a good person she was and how good she was to them and how she helped them and that kind of stuff. So, you know, she really was very well loved by everybody, I think.
Did she spend much time in Franklin? I know that, I mean, we're from Franklin, so we're obviously curious, but I know you said her mom was originally from there.
Her mom was originally from Franklin. One of her sisters lived in Franklin,
okay.
Frances McDaniel. She lived there, and then her husband was from Franklin, and his family was there.
Okay.
So she was there quite a bit, and she's actually buried in Franklin,
Mount Hope.
Buried. Yeah.
Is that why she wanted to be buried there, you think? But
her mom, her mother and dad were buried there.
Okay.
And then I guess Henry's family is buried there too. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, she must have been an avid tennis player because.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard stories over the years of different people that played tennis with her in Franklin.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
That's cool.
I know.
She did. They had a tennis court. They put a tennis court in at her house a few years after they bought that house. They built a tennis court.
Is that the house that was on Curtis Wood?
Wood, next to the governor's mansion.
Yes, okay.
They had a tennis court built, and the funny thing about the tennis court was they came in and built it, and then when they started using it, and people kept, even real good players, they kept hitting the ball out, and they said, you know, this is odd, and finally one of the tennis pros from one of the country clubs was out there, and he got to looking, and he said, I don't think this is measured right. And sure enough, it was like, I think it was like 2 feet short or something.
That's hilarious.
And so that's why everybody was hitting the
everybody
ball out.
Everybody looks so strong. Yeah.
That is so funny.
They had to come
funny.
Back and redo it. But I remember that story. She said, you know, it was like,
no wonder.
It was crazy. Yeah.
Maybe at that day and age, there weren't a lot of requests for home tennis courts.
Maybe
I don't
not.
Know. That
I
might have
know.
Been that company's first one.
It could have been. I don't know. But I think they came back and fixed it.
Wow. Well, you were an integral part in getting the life-size bronze statue.
Yes.
Here in Centerville. Tell us about why you felt like that was an important way to honor Philia.
Well, we wanted a statue, I mean, for years, and I wanted one that was real personable and that people could sit down next to. Mm-hmm. I really wanted it to be sitting on a bench where you could sit down with her, and I wanted it to be very lifelike. And the sculptor, Jennifer Grisham, is from Columbia, and she approached us about doing it and showed us things, and I worked with her, gave her pictures, and we talked a lot and everything, and I mean, she just did, she captured her just
perfectly. It's beautiful. Perfectly.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the most beautiful statue in Tennessee. Yeah, I mean, it is beautiful.
Yeah.
So, and it's even, the way she is arranged, people can sit on both sides of her, and, mm-hmm. and her lap is flat enough where you can sit a baby in her lap. And you would not believe how many kids, they climb all over her. It is so funny to watch. I can see it from the office when I'm up there.
Yeah.
And we've got some of the cutest pictures because these kids, they get up in her lap and they, you know, they'll look up in her face and they just.
That's precious.
They're really drawn. Kids are really drawn to her. And uh-huh. then one night I looked over there and there was all these boys. They were over there playing ball, throwing a football. And then they were all around her on that bench and all standing around. And I thought she would love that.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
All those
she would
boys
love all
there.
Those boys around.
But it took us a while to raise the money, but we got some and lots of people donated just small amounts here and there. And then we had a few big donations that we really appreciated and got, and it was mostly local, almost all local.
That's awesome,
and so we're real proud of it.
You should be.
We love it.
Yes.
I love it, and I want it. You know, I want the thing I want people to remember. I mean, she was very famous. She was famous all over the world. She got all these awards. She got Country Music Hall. She did all these things. But I want them to remember that she was from a small town and she had a dream and mm-hmm. she didn't give up on her dream mm-hmm. and made it come true. And it all happened mm-hmm. like, not exactly like she wanted, because she wanted to be a dramatic actress, but it happened for her. And, mm-hmm. you know, if she can do it, anybody can do it. And of course, I don't know if you know or not, she was actually discovered in Centerville at a very low point in her life when she thought it was over.
Really?
Yes, I did read that.
Okay.
Yeah, because she had been traveling with the Sewell Company and doing Minnie Pearl. She had already quit, and her father died, and mm-hmm. she ended up having to move back to Centerville to kind of take care of her mom because her eyesight was failing and she needed help and everything. And she got a job. This was during the Depression. She got a job with the WPA doing an after-school program up on the square. In the upstairs of the KP Hall, the Knights of Pythias building, and it must have been awful in a way. I mean, she had all these kids, and she said when school would be out, they would come running up the stairs like thunderous footsteps, mm-hmm. you know. And she said, and I mean, she enjoyed the kids and everything, but it wasn't where she wanted to be,
right.
and it wasn't what she wanted to be doing. And as much as she loved Centerville, she didn't want to be here right at that time. Mm-hmm. She was 20, about 28, 26, 28.
Okay.
And so one day, and this is my favorite story, I love to tell this story. One day, one afternoon, I'll back up a minute. She had done a show for the Lions Club. She had helped with a show for the Lions Club to fundraiser, and she had done Minnie Pearl. And three of her friends played brother, Hezzy, and sister. And it was the only time that she ever had live people playing those parts, ever. That was the only time that ever happened. And so they did this thing at the Lions Club, and it was, you know. And then a few weeks after that, the president of the bank here came up there and asked her if she was teaching music lessons and dance lessons and singing lessons too to some of the kids, and he wanted some of them to entertain during dinner for this bankers convention that was going to be in Centerville. And she said, you know, fine, that's good. Well, it was upstairs up this long flight of dark steps, which is still there. And she said, as he turned around to leave, he turned back and he said, by the way, the guest speaker is coming. He's flying into Nashville from Chicago, and he might be late. And if he is, could you do that Minnie Pearl thing? And she said, yeah, sure, she would do that. So the night came, and her students performed, and sure enough, the guy was late. So she had, and she had forgotten about it and didn't even have her costume.
Oh, gosh.
But he said, can you do the Minnie Pearl thing? She said, yeah, I'll do it. So she went out and did the Minnie Pearl thing. And she said, he was very late. She said she did every joke she knew.
Oh,
she told
no.
every story she knew. She said she finally, she went to the piano. She played the piano. She had them to sing along. And, you know, she was just doing everything she could do. And she said she knew it was going real well. I mean, she said it was great. And they, she said, I had them in the palm of my hand.
Oh,
I mean,
good.
They were just, you know. But anyway, he finally got there. And so she stopped. And she didn't think any more about it. But Bob Turner was in the audience. And he called the Grand Ole Opry the next week and told them that there was a girl in Central that they needed on the Opry.
Wow.
And so she got an audition and went up there and performed at 11:05 at the Opry. My granddaddy drove her up there. He took her and her mom.
Wow.
And they went to, and she was a big hit, and they asked her back, and
and
the rest
it
was
all
history.
Went from
wow.
There.
So, you know, after wow. all of that, she was actually discovered right here in Centerville when she thought.
That is so interesting.
Yeah.
Came home to be honoring her mother
uh-huh.
and helpful and
yeah.
put her career maybe on hold,
hold.
Or maybe toss it aside
yeah.
completely. Wow.
So she.
It reminds me of my favorite movie, which is It's a Wonderful Life,
yeah.
and how he similarly
mm-hmm.
had to put his dreams on
right.
hold to tend to
right.
his father's, you know, affairs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And isn't it funny, though, that in that story, he finds out it's a wonderful life and
mm-hmm.
how great things are. And she
right.
ended up, even with all the fame, Grinder Switch was her heart
mm-hmm.
and where she could go
mm-hmm.
to in the midst mm-hmm.
Of everything.
Of
yeah.
everything.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
so beautiful.
And take everybody with her.
Yes.
Right.
You know, that's
right.
a real gift when you
that
can take people with you on a journey or to a place.
Mm-hmm.
And it is sometimes the more you travel, the more you realize how special home is.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Well, and one of her other legacies that we did want to make sure to mention is the Sarah Cannon Cancer Center
right.
in Nashville. So many people have hope
mm-hmm.
now that they didn't have because
right.
of research that's been done there. So were you surprised at that coming to be as part of the story of her?
No, my grandmother died of cancer
mm-hmm.
fairly young. She died in the 60s. And that was very devastating for her. They were really, really close. And after that, she started working with the Cancer
okay.
Society. That
okay.
was what led her really to
mm-hmm.
to that cause, I
mm-hmm.
guess you'd say. And
mm-hmm.
so she did a lot. She came down here several times and did things for our local cancer crusades and things.
Okay.
She would come and we had a big called Grinder Switch Days, and we had it actually at Grinder Switch. And she would come down, you know, and help raise money for that. And then
mm-hmm.
she traveled, and she—I think she was the chairman or co-chairman of the American Cancer Society fundraiser thing. So I was, you know, it was a very logical thing.
Yeah.
Then she had a bout with breast cancer,
mm-hmm.
and felt very strongly about it. And
mm-hmm.
and my mother had breast cancer. And had surgery when they still did surgery in Centerville. And she
mm-hmm.
came down that day and stayed with us all day, you know, in the waiting room and everything. So
wow.
she felt real strongly about that
yeah.
cause. So
yeah.
it didn't surprise me at all.
Yeah. Well, I read about you, Mary Beth, that you had always known that you would be a writer.
Yeah.
And that was something you aspired to, I think, even at a young age.
Oh, yeah.
If I'm correct in what I read. So
yeah, I've been writing all my life.
What sorts of things are you enjoying writing about these days?
Well, I have a blog, Sit a Spell with Mary, and I write just stuff that's happening to me. Some people may think I make some of this stuff up, but I swear I don't. These things just happen to me. And some of it is I write about, like, the wildflowers or the farm. And in the history, I've written a lot about the history of my family. I've written several stories about Fee and about other people in my family. And then things here in the county, you know, about in my childhood and growing up. But I have these dogs. I have four dogs, four collies. And I got, the oldest one is just 4 years old. But I've had collies all my life.
Okay.
I mean, from the time I was a baby. I learned how to walk holding on to a collie, you know, going up and down the walk. And and they just get into all this stuff and do, and I'm on a farm and there's like the garden and there, but there's always, and I have horses and the horses get out and the cows get out. And so there's just always something happening and my tractor won't work. And you know, and the name of my book, it's a collection of my blog, Turned by the Red Calf, that came from, we were down in the pasture because the guy came out to do metal detecting and we were riding around in this car. And I was trying to tell him how to get down to this other old house that was down there, and there was this red calf standing there. And I said, turn by that red calf.
That sounds very Southern.
It's very Southern. And then I don't know my right from my left. I'm terrible with directions, so I get lost periodically, and I write about that. So, you know, it's just everyday things that happen to me.
Yeah. I liked the line of in the description of your book that said about it's about the adventures and the misadventures.
Right. Mostly misadventures. But well, I love to write. I mean, I've been writing all my life. And then when I retired, I finally had time to really... I used to sell short stories, some children's stories, and write little things, little essays and things. And then I was a librarian for 40 years, so I kind of didn't have much time right then. But since then, I've been doing a lot of writing, and I love it. I just like to write.
I love it. Is there anything else you'd love for people to know about Hickman County or just some of the things that you like to share about this area?
Well, it's a beautiful place. If you like nature and like to get out and ride around and see beautiful scenery, we've got some of the prettiest views and prettiest scenery in the world. I mean, it's a really beautiful place. Lots of wildflowers. Like there's places, you know, along the road when wildflowers come in. And if you like to look at cows, and we've still got a lot of farms here. We have several century farms, like my farm. That Century Farm is a farm that's been in a family for 100 years, at least 100 years, and we've got about, I don't know, 16 of them here.
Wow.
So we still have a lot of farmland, and we've got some neat little shops up on the square that they're sort of redoing the square. They're working on restoring some of the buildings. And good places to eat. We're real blessed with a nice place to live here.
Yes.
And a good community, a really good community.
Well, good. Mary Beth, you are such a treasure of stories and wonderful things to share. I know we could probably sit here for hours, honestly.
Well,
yeah. I like sitting a spell with you.
Taking your brain.
Talking is one of my talents.
Sounds like it runs in the family,
right?
I can
talk about anything.
Well, I think our listeners are going to enjoy hearing the stories shared with us.
Fun.
So,
it's been fun.
Thank you.
And, I appreciate people remembering Afia. I really appreciate that people remember her and still love her.
Yes.
Yeah.
You've just listened to an episode of the Steel Magnolias podcast, an independent show funded solely on support from listeners like you and a few advertisers from time to time. For reminders of what we just said and links to what we just mentioned, take a look at the description of this episode. They are right there. Are you enjoying the show? We hope you'll text a friend or a loved one to tell them about the podcast. Make sure they know how to get to a podcast first. And we invite you to join our mailing list to be the first to know about episodes, giveaways, events, and even those gatherings. Sign up at steelmagnoliaspodcast.com.